This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Wendy Weiser, Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Wendy Weiser is here today to tell us about her State of Voting in 2014 report, which was just released last month and co-authored with Eric Opsahl. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Brennan Center for Justice and the Democracy Program?
Sure. The Brennan Center is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit, public interest think tank and law center associated with NYU Law School. And we work on fundamental issues of democracy and justice. We do research and reports, and we do legal work and policy work as well.
Before we go into the specifics, what is the state of voting in 2014?
Well, in 2014, we are rather surprisingly still in the midst of a high-pitched battle over voting rights in America, something so fundamental to our country, with states across the country passing laws and executive actions that could make it harder for many eligible Americans to vote. And we're really right in the midst of that. There are, at this point, between 2010 and 2014, Americans in 22 states will face new voting restrictions that were not in place in 2010 if those aren't reversed by courts. There are court battles going on in a number of those states, but it is nearly half the country. Voters could find it harder to vote in 2014 than they did in 2010.
Based on your State of Voting in 2014 report, what types of voting restrictions are being put into place in the U.S.?
They do vary. The most common new voting restriction are highly restrictive photo ID laws, so laws that require voters to show a specific form of government-issued ID that many Americans don't have in order to vote. And they are getting more and more restrictive in certain states. According to a study that we did, 11% of Americans don't have the kinds of photo ID that are being required in these new restrictive laws that we're seeing in states like Texas, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and some other states across the country. And those are disproportionately younger voters, older voters, and minority voters especially. We are also seeing states cutting back on opportunities to register to vote, states cutting back on early voting opportunities, and particularly slashing weekend early voting and other days when minority voters were especially active in voting in 2012 and in 2008. And states are also cutting back on the ability for people with past convictions to get their voting rights restored as well. So those are some of the restrictions we're seeing. It's really quite a variety. Voter ID has been the most common, but by no means the only way in which we're seeing voting rights being cut back in the country today.
What are some of the characteristics of the places where voting restrictions are being passed?
Really, we're seeing voting restrictions passed in many states across the country that has been largely in the South and in the Midwest. And there have been really kind of two major factors at play. It has been a highly partisan fight, and in almost all of the states where we've seen voting restrictions put in place, they were put in place entirely by Republican-controlled bodies. As the proportion of Republicans in the legislatures increased, according to a recent study from the University of Massachusetts, we saw the likelihood of bills being introduced or passed increase commensurately. So it's been very partisan. And race has also been a very critical factor. We've seen the more a state had an increase in African-American turnout and the more they saw an increase in Hispanic population growth, the more likely they were to see new voting restrictions in place. We've seen 7 of the 11 states with the highest African-American turnout in 2008 pass voting restrictions. 9 of the 12 states that saw the highest Hispanic population growth also passed voting restrictions. And there have been some social science studies that are also confirming that coming out as well. Many of those states were actually states that were formerly covered by the Voting Rights Act, a provision that the Supreme Court has recently gutted because of a history of past discrimination on the basis of race in voting.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but why are the restrictions being implemented? What are the driving forces?
There aren't really good policy reasons to put in place these measures that are really just to make it harder for Americans to vote. It is politicians manipulating the voting process for their own benefit.
And how about the issue of voter fraud? Because that does seem to be brought up.
Many of the measures are being justified purportedly as measures to address voter fraud, but many of them have nothing to do with voter fraud whatsoever. The justification rings really hollow. There is nothing about cutting back days of early voting. There is nothing about making it harder for people to find voter registration opportunities that have any impact on voter fraud in the country at all. Also, the kinds of measures that are being put in place, the kinds of voter fraud that they're trying to address are actually being effectively addressed by a whole bunch of other protections that are currently in place in law. And in fact, they're working. The, you know, in-person voter fraud that is being raised as a concern is highly, highly unlikely and rare in the country. One is more likely to be struck by lightning than to find an American who's actually committed in-person voter fraud. We have very effective measures in place currently.
Which of the restrictions are most problematic in terms of making it less likely voters will vote?
It's a good question. All of the restrictions do have an impact on voter access and the ability of people to participate in the process. If you look at the early voting restrictions, the cutbacks, there were cutbacks in Florida in the 2012 election where they found that 200,000 fewer people were not able to vote because of the long lines on election day. And it found that 18% of the people that had voted early on the days that were cut and the hours that were cut in Florida weren't able to vote at all in the 2012 election when those days weren't there in place. So you can see that there's an actual impact on access, even, you know, from cutting back on opportunities to vote. Voter ID, it's controversial to determine how much of an impact on voter turnout it is because there haven't been so many studies to that effect. Political scientists do agree that any kind of additional cost on voting, like these restrictive IDs, and the more restrictive the IDs are, the more the cost is, will have a greater impact on participation and turnout. At this point, we don't know what that percentage will be, but we do know that real Americans are being turned away from the polls under these new requirements and that there's going to be some kind of significant impact on the outcome.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Wendy Weiser, Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Our topic is the state of voting in 2014, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about what groups of people are being impacted by the new restrictions?
All Americans are actually going to be impacted in that they will all find it harder to access the voting system and to participate. But there are some groups that are going to be especially impacted. And the laws, according to numerous research reports, disproportionately harm minorities, low-income individuals, seniors, students, and people with disabilities. And if you take voter ID laws, for example, I mentioned that the research shows that 11% of Americans don't have the forms of state-issued photo IDs that are being required by these new, more restrictive laws. I mean, all states require some form of identification, but these restrictive laws affect 11% of Americans. If you look at other groups like seniors, the number jumps up to 18% who don't have those kinds of state-issued photo IDs. African Americans, 25%. Latinos, 16%. So the numbers really do go up significantly for particular demographic groups. The early voting cutbacks also do disproportionately affect African Americans, since the days that were cut back in states like North Carolina, Ohio, Wisconsin were days where there were voting drives across a number of communities. And if you look at North Carolina, for example, 23% of all African Americans who voted in 2008 voted during the week that was cut by the new restrictive voting law. If you look at a study in Ohio in 2008, 56% of all people who voted early on the weekend that was originally cut in Cuyahoga County, which is the state's largest county, were African American. So they do disproportionately impact certain groups more than others. Though, of course, everybody suffers with fewer voting opportunities.
How much evidence is there so far that the restrictions are actually affecting voting?
As I mentioned early on, most of these restrictions have not yet been in place in a federal election. 22 states in 2014 are going to see new restrictions in place that they didn't see in place in 2010, and of those 15, we'll see 2014 be the first major federal election with the restrictions in place. So these are all very new. In fact, there's been a lot of success in the courts in actually staving off some of these restrictions up until now. So we don't have as much evidence of what is going to happen, though there have been places where some of these restrictions have already been in place, and there is significant evidence that they're having an impact. There have been certain smaller local elections or primary elections where some of the new voter ID requirements have been already put in place that are about to go into effect. And those are much lower salience elections, and there have been an impact. There have been hundreds or thousands of voters in different states that have been turned away under those new requirements. If we look at documentary proof of citizenship requirements to register to vote in states like Arizona and Kansas, Arizona had experience with that in effect for a period of time in the past, and immediately there were 30,000 voters that were unable to get on the voter rolls when the law was first put into effect. So they already have been having an impact, but part of what is really of concern is that we're going to see a huge deluge of new voting requirements and voting restrictions for the first time this coming election if they're not blocked in the courts.
What is the likely effect of the restrictions on the midterm election in November? What's your prediction?
I'm currently hopeful that many of the restrictions will be able to be blocked or postponed by court cases. There are currently ongoing lawsuits, major lawsuits in 7 states, and so I'm hopeful that these lawsuits will be successful. This is contrary to core American legal values to cut back on voting rights. So I'm currently a little bit more optimistic. In the other states, we are going to see an effect on voter participation. It will be a measurable effect, and hopefully we'll be able to change it going forward.
Let's focus in now on the efforts being made to push back against the voting restrictions. You've been alluding to those, but which are the key challenges to the restrictions that are going on?
There are really major lawsuits in 7 states, and there are lawsuits challenging, you know, fairly restrictive laws. Lawsuits in North Carolina, which passed one of the most restrictive voting laws in decades, which had a range of voting restrictions, cutting back on early voting, imposing very restrictive photo ID requirements, cutting back on voter registration opportunities. There are lawsuits in Texas and Wisconsin, both of which have also some of the strictest photo ID laws in the country, laws that cherry pick which IDs people can show and allow people in Texas, for example, to vote using a concealed handgun license, but not using a state-issued student photo ID. There are major lawsuits involving new proof of citizenship requirements to register to vote in Arizona and Kansas. And there's also a major lawsuit in Ohio and in Arkansas. In Ohio, challenging cutbacks on early voting, and in Arkansas, before the state Supreme Court, challenging its restrictive photo ID law. So those are the really big lawsuits that we're watching now. There was a very big lawsuit in Pennsylvania challenging a photo ID law. In fact, the voters prevailed in that lawsuit, and the governor decided not to appeal. So Pennsylvania's restrictive photo ID law will not go into effect, and it will have now a more usual identification requirement in line with the rest of the country.
Who is bringing the lawsuits?
There's a variety of different folks bringing the lawsuits. They're often groups representing voters, like the League of Women Voters, like the ACLU. The Department of Justice is involved in a number of these lawsuits as well. In many of these states, the laws being challenged are also states that were formerly covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, and many of the lawsuits are being brought under that law. The Voting Rights Act, which the Department of Justice was charged with enforcing. so the Department of Justice is involved in a number of these cases as well.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Wendy Weiser, Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Our topic is the state of voting in 2014. Have there been additional types of efforts to push back against the restrictions in addition to lawsuits?
Absolutely. The efforts to push back have been at the legislative level as well. There have even been efforts to put ballot initiatives to improve the voting process in states that allow those things. And one thing to note, even though there is a real high-pitched battle over voting rights and efforts to restrict voting in much of the country, at the same time, we're seeing a real push and energy around improving the voting process in other places across the country. And that is actually much more bipartisan, much less controversial, holds much greater promise for the future. And I do hope that that is the wave of the future. And it is worth noting that this year, while we've seen an ongoing push to cut back on voting, there was much more legislative energy around improving the voting process, modernizing voter registration, allowing for online voter registration, expanding early voting in other places, easing voter ID burdens, expanding access to ballots in other ways. And we saw actually hundreds of bills across the country to do that. And in fact, 10 states passed laws that actually expanded voting this year compared to only two or three that cut back on voting this year. So there is some real positive momentum as well going on across the country. And I do hope and expect that that really is the wave of the future.
Which states have been most active in improving the voting system?
We've seen really improvements across the country. Some of the significant improvements over the past few years include Colorado, which really modernized its voter registration system, expanded voting opportunities in a variety of ways. Maryland also expanded its voter registration system in a lot of ways. We've seen many states, from Illinois to Virginia, add online voter registration. That's been a very popular reform. Many states have also been starting to expand early voting. That is something that is also very popular. There are a few states that are using it as a tool to cut back on voting rights and to target particular communities. But in most of the country, we're actually seeing an expansion of early voting opportunities and a recognition that actually not only makes voting more convenient for voters, but eases long lines that made people really angry in 2012 and that caused the president to speak out and to actually set up a whole commission, a bipartisan commission to look in. It would be really helped by modernizing the voter registration system, by expanding early voting and making other polling place management improvements. And there's really some positive momentum on those fronts across the country.
Looking towards a more ideal future, what would you list as the key elements of a good voting system? What should it have?
Currently, the single biggest failure in our voting system is our ramshackle voter registration system, which in much of the country is still really in the 19th century, a paper-based system that relies on voters to fill out paper-based forms, send them through the mail, somebody to type them in. It is filled with errors. It means that people are often not on the rolls or are on the rolls multiple times or have incorrect information. It makes it very hard for election administrators to manage the election, and it creates a lot of problems for voters as well. So the single biggest thing we need to do is really modernize that system, bring it into the 21st century. We have the technology actually to get every eligible American registered, get them registered accurately while saving money and reducing the opportunity for fraud. So that is, I think, our top priority as just an improvement. It will also reduce long lines as well. The voter registration mess does lead to problems at the polls on election day. Early voting expansion is another really helpful reform. This is something that we already see, as I mentioned, a lot of momentum across the country. It really does not only provide more voting opportunities and more convenient voter opportunities, but does reduce the problem of long lines and congestion on election day and actually enables election officials to identify problems in advance of Election Day and solve them. So that's another really important reform. And then we do need to spend some time looking at our resources at polling places and making sure that we're allocating them properly. There have been some tools that the recent Bipartisan Presidential Commission on Election Administration suggested that states use. That is something that is also really important. We have a study coming out that shows that those polling place resource decisions make a real difference to not only long lines, but as it turns out, you have fewer polling place resources in minority precincts, and they're more likely to wait in line longer. So I think that those are the kind of three top priorities. I think we can also spend a little bit of effort on improving our ballot design and our election form design. And one thing that we really need to look at going forward into the future is we do need to upgrade our voting machines. We all bought new voting machines, and we are hitting the expiration date of all these voting machines across the country. And we currently don't have a federal agency that's functioning in place that can certify new voting machines. And so we're heading into a potential voting machine crisis going forward in coming years. We really need to address that as well.
What are your thoughts about vote by mail? That's what we do in Washington State.
Vote by mail is certainly a popular reform in the West, and many states have had very positive experiences with it, and we've seen some expansion there. I think in other parts of the country, the energy is going more towards early voting than vote by mail. So both of those are reforms that do expand the voting opportunities and convenience for voters and help election officials ease administrative burdens. And I think it depends on the particular state and its political culture and some of its demographic features as to whether or not that's the right reform for them.
Considering the results of your report, what are your thoughts on the overall implications for our democracy of the ongoing changes in voting laws?
I do think that it's really quite a travesty that in the 21st century, as we approach 2014, that we are actually still fighting over something as basic as the right to vote. And it's embarrassing for the leading democracy in the world to actually be going through these kinds of problems. What we really need to do is turn away from these polarizing issues and turn towards those issues that have the bipartisan consensus, the issues like modernizing voter registration, making our polling places work well. And those are things that can expand access and reduce fraud together.
How does the current effort to restrict voting or putting in new regulations fit in with the history of voter suppression?
The battle that we're seeing right now is, in fact, the most significant movement to restrict voting in decades. And if you're looking at it from a legislative perspective, we actually have not seen this many laws passed to cut back on voting rights since Reconstruction, so really in a century. So in historical context, this is really quite retrograde and anomalous. And it's something that I hope is just a blip, but it's been going on for a couple of years now, and it's something that we really need to stop. I'm very much hoping that the courts are going to continue to step up. The courts have really been recognizing that something is amiss and have been, for the most part, blocking these new voting restrictions. But there are many cases that are still ongoing. We don't know what the final outcome of that's going to be.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
One very important thing to keep in mind is even though we have new voting restrictions in place across the country, in nowhere is it impossible for Americans to vote, and I do encourage everybody to learn the voting rules in your state and to make sure that you get registered and that you go out to vote this November. Our democracy is stronger when everyone participates, and we want to make sure that everyone does. I also hope that your listeners will stand up against efforts to cut back on voting rights. I think America should not be cutting back and making it harder for people to vote. What we should be doing is working together to make sure that we have the best voting system in the world. Politicians should not be manipulating the voting process, should not be cutting back on our fundamental right to vote. We should have free, fair, and accessible elections for all. And what we can do to reform the process is to get behind those reforms that everyone can support, that both expand access and reduce the opportunity for fraud. Things like upgrading our voter registration system, expanding voting opportunities, and making sure that our polling places function well.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Wendy.
Thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Wendy Weiser, Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. For more information, check on the web at brennancenter.org. Again, that's brennancenter.org. And for Washington State residents, be sure to vote in the upcoming August 5th primary election. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.